Chapter 6. Stopping, calming, resting, healing. Buddhist meditation has two aspects, shamatha and vipassana. We tend to stress the importance of vipassana, looking deeply, because it can bring us insight and liberate us from suffering and afflictions. But the practice of shamatha, stopping, is fundamental. If we cannot stop, we cannot have insight. There is a story in Zen circles about a man and a horse. The horse is galloping quickly, and it appears that the man on the horse is going somewhere important. Another man standing on the road shouts, "Where are you going?" And the first man replies, "I don't know. Ask the horse." This is also our story. We are riding a horse. We don't know where we are going, and we can't stop. The horse is our habit energy, pulling us along, and we are powerless. We are always running, and it has become a habit. We struggle all the time, even during our sleep. We are at war within ourselves, and we can easily start a war with others. We have to learn the art of stopping our thinking, our habit energies, our forgetfulness, the strong emotions that rule us. When an emotion rushes through us like a storm, we have no peace. We turn on the TV and then we turn it off. We pick up a book and then we put it down. How can we stop this state of agitation? How can we stop our fear, despair, anger, and craving? We can stop by practicing mindful breathing, mindful walking, mindful smiling, and deep looking in order to understand. When we are mindful, touching deeply the present moment, the fruits are always understanding, acceptance, love, and the desire to relieve suffering and bring joy. But our habit energies are often stronger than our volition. We say and do things we don't want to, and afterwards we regret it. We make ourselves and others suffer, and we bring about a lot of damage. We may vow not to do it again, but we do it again. Why? Because our habit energies, vashana, push us. We need the energy of mindfulness to recognize and be present with our habit energy in order to stop this course of destruction. With mindfulness, we have the capacity to recognize the habit energy every time it manifests. "Hello, my habit energy. I know you are there." If we just smile to it, it will lose much of its strength. Mindfulness is the energy that allows us to recognize our habit energy and prevent it from dominating us. Forgetfulness is the opposite. We drink a cup of tea, but we do not know we are drinking a cup of tea. We sit with the person we love, but we don't know that she is there. We walk, but we are not really walking. We are someplace else, thinking about the past or the future. The horse of our habit energy is carrying us along, and we are its captive. We need to stop our horse and reclaim our liberty. We need to shine the light of mindfulness on everything we do, so the darkness of forgetfulness will disappear. The first function of meditation, shamatha, is to stop. The second function of shamatha is calming. When we have a strong emotion, we know it can be dangerous to act, but we don't have the strength or clarity to refrain. We have to learn the art of breathing in and out, stopping our activities, and calming our emotions. We have to learn to become solid and stable like an oak tree and not be blown from side to side by the storm. The Buddha taught many techniques to help us calm our body and mind and look deeply at them. They can be summarized in 5 stages. 1. Recognition. If we are angry, we say, "I know that anger is in me." 2. Acceptance. When we are angry, we do not deny it. We accept what is present. 3. embracing. We hold our anger in our two arms like a mother holding her crying baby. Our mindfulness embraces our emotion, and this alone can calm our anger and ourselves. 4, looking deeply. When we are calm enough, we can look deeply to understand what has brought this anger to be, what is causing our baby's discomfort. 5, insight. The fruit of looking deeply is understanding the many causes and conditions, primary and secondary, that have brought about our anger, that are causing our baby to cry. Perhaps our baby is hungry. Perhaps his diaper pin is piercing his skin. Our anger was triggered when our friend spoke to us meanly, and suddenly we remember that he was not at his best today because his father is dying. We reflect like this until we have some insights into what has caused our suffering. With insight, we know what to do and what not to do to change the situation. After calming, the third function of shamatha is resting. Suppose someone standing alongside a river throws a pebble in the air and it falls down into the river. The pebble allows itself to sink slowly and reach the riverbed without any effort. Once the pebble is at the bottom, it continues to rest, allowing the water to pass by. When we practice sitting meditation, we can allow ourselves to rest just like that pebble. We can allow ourselves to sink naturally into the position of sitting, resting without effort. We have to learn the art of resting, allowing our body and mind to rest. If we have wounds in our body or our mind, we have to rest so they can heal themselves. Calming allows us to rest, and resting is a precondition for healing. When animals in the forest get wounded, they find a place to lie down, and they rest completely for many days. They don't think about food or anything else. They just rest, and they get the healing they need. When we humans get sick, we just worry. We look for doctors and medicine, but we don't stop. Even when we go to the beach or the mountains for a vacation, we don't rest, and we come back more tired than before. We have to learn to rest. Lying down is not the only position for resting. During sitting or walking meditation, we can rest very well. Meditation does not have to be hard labor. Just allow your body and mind to rest like an animal in the forest. Don't struggle. There is no need to attain anything. I am writing a book, but I am not struggling. I am resting also. Please read in a joyful yet restful way. The Buddha said, "My Dharma is the practice of non-practice. Practice in a way that does not tire you out, but gives your body, emotions, and consciousness a chance to rest. Our body and mind have the capacity to heal themselves if we allow them to rest. Stopping, calming, and resting are preconditions for healing. If we cannot stop, the course of our destruction will just continue. The world needs healing. Individuals, communities, and nations need healing." Chapter 7, Touching Our Suffering. In the Pali version of the Discourse on Turning the Wheel of the Dharma, the Buddha told the five monks, "As long as the insight and the understanding of these four noble truths in their three stages and 12 aspects, just as they are, had not been fully realized, I could not say that in this world with its gods, Maras, Brahmas, recluses, Brahmins, and men, someone had realized the highest awakening. Monks, as soon as the insight and understanding of the four noble truths in their three stages and 12 aspects, just as they are, had been realized, I could say that in this world, with its gods, Maras, Brahmas, recluses, Brahmins, and men, someone had realized the highest awakening." In the Chinese version of the sutra, the Buddha said, "Monks, The experience of the three turnings of the wheel with regard to each of the four truths gives rise to eyes of awakened understanding. And therefore, I declare before gods, spirits, shramanas, and brahmins of all times that I have destroyed all afflictions and reached full awakening. The wheel of the Dharma was put in motion 12 times, three for each of the four noble truths. To understand the four noble truths, not just intellectually, but experientially, we have to practice the 12 turnings of the wheel. The 12 turnings of the wheel. First noble truth, suffering. Turnings. Recognition. This is suffering. Encouragement. Suffering should be understood. Realization. Suffering is understood. Second noble truth. Arising of suffering. Turnings. Recognition. There is an ignoble way that has led to suffering. Encouragement. That ignoble way should be understood. Realization. That ignoble way is understood. Third noble truth. Cessation of suffering. Well-being. Turnings. Recognition. Well-being is possible. Encouragement. Well-being should be obtained. Realization. Well-being is obtained. Fourth noble truth. How well-being arises. Turnings. Recognition. There is a noble path that leads to well-being. Encouragement. This noble path has to be lived. Realization. This noble path is being lived. The first turning is called recognition. We sense that something is wrong, but we are not able to say exactly what it is. We make some effort to escape, but we cannot. We try to deny our suffering, but it persists. The Buddha said that to suffer and not know that we are suffering is more painful than the burden endured by a mule carrying an unimaginably heavy load. We must, first of all, recognize that we are suffering, and then determine whether its basis is physical, physiological, or psychological. Our suffering needs to be identified. Recognizing and identifying our suffering is like the work of a doctor diagnosing an illness. He or she says, "If I press here, does it hurt?" And we say, "Yes, this is my suffering. This has come to be." The wounds in our heart become the object of our meditation. We show them to our doctor, and we show them to the Buddha, which means we show them to ourselves. Our suffering is us, and we need to treat it with kindness and nonviolence. We need to embrace our fear, hatred, anguish, and anger. "My dear suffering, I know you are there. I am here for you, and I will take care of you." We stop running from our pain. With all our courage and tenderness, we recognize, acknowledge, and identify it. The second turning of the wheel is called encouragement. After recognizing and identifying our pain, we take the time to look deeply into it in order to understand its true nature, which means its causes. After observing our symptoms, the doctor says, "I will look deeply into it. This illness can be understood." It may take him a week to conduct tests and inquire about what we have been eating, our attitudes, how we spend our time, and so on. But he is determined to understand our illness. Our suffering, depression, illness, a difficult relationship, or fear, needs to be understood. And like a doctor, we are determined to understand it. We practice sitting and walking meditation, and we ask for guidance and support from our friends, and, if we have one, our teacher. As we do this, we see that the causes of our suffering are knowable, and we make every effort to get to the bottom of it. At this stage, our practice can still be set back, ashrava. The third turning of the wheel is called realization and can be expressed as this suffering has been understood. We realize the efforts begun during the second turning. The doctor tells us the name and all the characteristics of our illness. After studying, reflecting upon, and practicing the first noble truth, we realize that we have stopped running away from our pain. We can now call our suffering by its specific name and identify all of its characteristics. This alone brings us happiness, joy without setbacks, anashrava. Still, after we have successfully diagnosed our ailment, for a time, we continue to create suffering for ourselves. We pour gasoline on the fire through our words, thoughts, and deeds, and often don't even realize it. The first turning of the wheel of the second noble truth is the recognition. I am continuing to create suffering. The Buddha said, when something has come to be, we have to acknowledge its presence and look deeply into its nature. When we look deeply, we will discover the kinds of nutriments that have helped it come to be and that continue to feed it. He then elaborated four kinds of nutriments that can lead to our happiness or our suffering: edible food, sense impressions, intention, and consciousness. The first nutriment is edible food. What we eat or drink can bring about mental or physical suffering. We must be able to distinguish between what is healthful and what is harmful. We need to practice right view when we shop, cook, and eat. The Buddha offered this example. A young couple and their 2-year-old child were trying to cross the desert, and they ran out of food. After deep reflection, the parents realized that in order to survive, they had to kill their son and eat his flesh. They calculated that if they ate such and such a proportion of their baby's flesh each day and carried the rest on their shoulders to dry, it would last the rest of the journey. But with every morsel of their baby's flesh they ate, the young couple cried and cried. After he told this story, the Buddha asked, "Dear friends, do you think the young man and woman enjoyed eating their son's flesh?" "No, Lord. It would not be possible for them to enjoy eating their son's flesh." The Buddha said, "Yet many people eat the flesh of their parents, their children, and their grandchildren and do not know it." Much of our suffering comes from not eating mindfully. We have to learn ways to eat that preserve the health and well-being of our body and our spirit. When we smoke, drink, or consume toxins, we are eating our own lungs, liver, and heart. If we have children and do these things, we are eating our children's flesh. Our children need us to be healthy and strong. We have to look deeply to see how we grow our food, so we can eat in ways that preserve our collective well-being, minimize our suffering and the suffering of other species, and allow the earth to continue to be a source of life for all of us. If, while we eat, we destroy living beings or the environment, we are eating the flesh of our own sons and daughters. We need to look deeply together and discuss how to eat, what to eat, and what to resist. This will be a real Dharma discussion. The second kind of nutriment is sense impressions. Our 6 sense organs, eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, and mind, are in constant contact, sparsha, with sense objects, and these contacts become food for our consciousness. When we drive through a city, our eyes see so many billboards, and these images enter our consciousness. When we pick up a magazine, the articles and advertisements are food for our consciousness. Advertisements that stimulate our craving for possessions, sex, and food can be toxic. If, after reading the newspaper, hearing the news, or being in a conversation, we feel anxious or worn out, we know we have been in contact with toxins. Movies are food for our eyes, ears, and minds. When we watch TV, the program is our food. Children who spend 5 hours a day watching television are ingesting images that water the negative seeds of craving, fear, anger, and violence in them. We are exposed to so many forms, colors, sounds, smells, tastes, objects of touch, and ideas that are toxic and rob our body and consciousness of their well-being. When you feel despair, fear, or depression, it may be because you have ingested too many toxins through your sense impressions. Not only children need to be protected from violent and unwholesome films, TV programs, books, magazines, and games, we too can be destroyed by these media. If we are mindful, we will know whether we are ingesting the toxins of fear, hatred, and violence, or eating foods that encourage understanding, compassion, and the determination to help others. With the practice of mindfulness, we will know that hearing this, looking at that, or touching this, we feel light and peaceful. While hearing that, looking at this, or touching that, we feel anxious, sad, or depressed. As a result, we will know what to be in contact with and what to avoid. Our skin protects us from bacteria. Antibodies protect us from internal invaders. We have to use the equivalent aspects of our consciousness to protect us from unwholesome sense objects that can poison us. The Buddha offered this drastic image. There is a cow with such a terrible skin disease that her skin is almost no longer there. When you bring her close to an ancient wall or old tree, all the living creatures in the bark of the tree come out, cling to the cow's body, and suck. When we bring her into the water, the same thing happens. Even when she is just exposed to the air, tiny insects come and suck. Then the Buddha said, "This is our situation also. We are exposed to invasions of all kinds, images, sounds, smells, touch, ideas, and many of these feed the craving, violence, fear, and despair in us. The Buddha advised us to post a sentinel, namely mindfulness, at each of our sense doors to protect ourselves. Use your Buddha eyes to look at each nutriment you are about to ingest. If you see that it is toxic, refuse to look at it, listen to it, taste it, or touch it. Ingest only what you are certain is safe. The 5 mindfulness trainings can help very much. We must come together as individuals, families, cities, and a nation to discuss strategies of self-protection and survival. To get out of the dangerous situation we are in, the practice of mindfulness has to be collective. The 3rd kind of nutriment is volition, intention, or will. The desire in us to obtain whatever it is that we want. Volition is the ground of all our actions. If we think that the way for us to be happy is to become president of a large corporation, everything we do or say will be directed toward realizing that goal. Even when we sleep, our consciousness will continue to work on it. Or suppose we believe that all our suffering and the suffering of our family has been brought about by someone who wronged us in the past. We believe we will only be happy if we inflict harm on that person. Our life is motivated solely by the desire for revenge, and everything we say, everything we plan, is to punish that person. At night, we dream of revenge, and we think this will liberate us from our anger and hatred. Everyone wants to be happy, and there is a strong energy in us pushing us toward what we think will make us happy. But we may suffer a lot because of this. We need the insight that position, revenge, wealth, fame, or possessions are, more often than not, obstacles to our happiness. We need to cultivate the wish to be free of these things so we can enjoy the wonders of life that are always available: the blue sky, the trees, our beautiful children. After 3 months or 6 months of mindful sitting, mindful walking, and mindful looking, a deep vision of reality arises in us, and the capacity of being there, enjoying life in the present moment, liberates us from all impulses and brings us real happiness. One day, after the Buddha and a group of monks finished eating lunch mindfully together, a farmer, very agitated, came by and asked, "Monks, have you seen my cows? I don't think I can survive so much misfortune." The Buddha asked him, "What happened?" And the man said, "Monks, this morning all 12 of my cows ran away. And this year my whole crop of sesame plants was eaten by insects." The Buddha said, "Sir, we have not seen your cows. Perhaps they have gone in the other direction." After the farmer went off in that direction, the Buddha turned to his Sangha and said, "Dear friends, do you know you are the happiest people on earth? You have no cows or sesame plants to lose. We always try to accumulate more and more, and we think these cows are essential for our existence. In fact, they may be the obstacles that prevent us from being happy. Release your cows and become a free person. Release your cows so you can be truly happy." The Buddha presented another drastic image. Two strong men are dragging a third man along in order to throw him into a fire pit. He cannot resist, and finally they throw him into the glowing embers. "These strong men," the Buddha said, "are our own volition. We don't want to suffer, but our deep-seated habit energies drag us into the fire of suffering." The Buddha advised us to look deeply into the nature of our volition, to see whether it is pushing us in the direction of liberation, peace, and compassion, or in the direction of suffering and unhappiness. We need to be able to see the kinds of intentioned food that we are consuming. The fourth kind of nutriment is consciousness. Our consciousness is composed of all the seeds sown by our past actions and the past actions of our family and society. Every day, our thoughts, words, and actions flow into the sea of our consciousness and create our body, mind, and world. We can nourish our consciousness by practicing the four immeasurable minds of love, compassion, joy, and equanimity. Or we can feed our consciousness with greed, hatred, ignorance, suspicion, and pride. Our consciousness is eating all the time, day and night, and what it consumes becomes the substance of our life. We have to be very careful which nutriments we ingest. In the year 255, Vietnamese meditation master Thanh Hoi taught that our consciousness is like the ocean with the six rivers of our senses flowing into it. Our mind and our body come from consciousness. They are formed by ourselves and our environment. Our life can be said to be a manifestation of our consciousness. Because of the food that our consciousness consumes, we are the person we are, and our environment is what it is. In fact, the edible foods we take into our body and the foods of sense impression and intention all end up in our consciousness. Our ignorance, hatred, and sadness all flow back to the sea of consciousness. We should know the kinds of food we feed our consciousness every day. When vijnana, consciousness, ripens, it brings forth a new form of life, nama rupa, mind, body. Rupa is our body or physical aspect, and nama is our mind or mental aspect. Body and mind are manifestations of our consciousness, and our consciousness is made of these kinds of food. We have to look at the five aggregates, skandhas, in us: form, feelings, perceptions, mental formations, and consciousness. They are nama rupa. The first of the five aggregates is rupa, and the other four are nama. They are all products of our alaya vijnana, our store consciousness. The Buddha offered another dramatic image to illustrate this. a dangerous murderer was captured and brought before the king, and the king sentenced him to death by stabbing. Take him to the courtyard and plunge 300 sharp knives through him. At noon, a guard reported, "Majesty, he is still alive." And the king declared, "Stab him 300 more times." In the evening, the guard again told the king, "Majesty, he is not yet dead." So the king gave the third order, "Plunge the 300 sharpest knives in the kingdom through him." Buddha said, "This is how we usually deal with our consciousness. Every time we ingest toxins into our consciousness, it is like stabbing ourselves with 300 sharp knives. We suffer, and our suffering spills out to those around us. When we practice the first turning of the first noble truth, we recognize suffering as suffering. If we are in a difficult relationship, we recognize this is a difficult relationship. Our practice is to be with our suffering and take good care of it. When we practice the first turning of the second noble truth, we look deeply into the nature of our suffering to see what kinds of nutriments we have been feeding it. How have we lived in the last few years, in the last few months, that has contributed to our suffering? We need to recognize and identify the nutriments we ingest and observe. When I think like this, speak like that, listen like this, or act like that, my suffering increases. Until we begin to practice the second noble truth, we tend to blame others for our unhappiness. Looking deeply requires courage. You can use a pencil and paper if you like. During sitting meditation, if you see clearly a symptom of your suffering, write it down. Then ask yourself, what kinds of nutriments have I been ingesting that have fed and sustained this suffering? When you begin to realize the kinds of nutriments you have been ingesting, you may cry. Use the energy of mindfulness all day long to be truly present, to embrace your suffering like a mother holding her baby. As long as mindfulness is there, you can stay with the difficulty. Practice does not mean using only your own mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. You also have to benefit from the mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom of friends on the path and your teacher. There are things that even a child can see, but we ourselves cannot see because we are imprisoned by our notions. Bring what you have written to a friend and ask for his or her observations and insights. If you sit with a friend and speak openly, determined to discover the roots of your suffering, eventually you will see them clearly. But if you keep your suffering to yourself, it might grow bigger every day. Just seeing the causes of your suffering lessens your burden. Shariputra, one of the Buddha's great disciples, said, "When something takes place, if we look at it deeply in the heart of reality, seeing its source and the food that nourishes it, we are already on the path of liberation. When we are able to identify our suffering and see its causes, we will have more peace and joy, and we are already on the path to liberation. In the second stage of the second noble truth, encouragement, we see clearly that real happiness is possible if we can stop ingesting the nutriments that cause us to suffer. If we know that our body is suffering because of the way we eat, sleep, or work, we vow to eat, sleep, or work in ways that are healthier. We encourage ourselves to put an end to the causes of our suffering. Only by a strong intention not to do things in the same way can we keep the wheel in motion. Mindfulness is the energy that can help us stop. We investigate the kinds of nutriments we now ingest and decide which ones to continue to eat and which to resist. We sit and look together with our friends, with our family, and as a community. Mindfulness of ingestion, protecting our body and mind, protecting our families, society, and the environment are important topics for us to discuss. When we direct our attention toward our suffering, we see our potential for happiness. We see the nature of suffering and the way out. That is why the Buddha called suffering a holy truth. When we use the word suffering in Buddhism, we mean the kind of suffering that can show us the way out. There are many practices that can help us face our suffering, including mindful walking, mindful breathing, mindful sitting, mindful eating, mindful looking, and mindful listening. One mindful step can take us deep into the realization of beauty and joy in us and around us. Tran Thai Tong, a great meditation master of 13th century Vietnam, said, "With every step, you touch the ground of reality. If you practice mindful walking and deep listening all day long, that is the Four Noble Truths in action. When the cause of suffering has been seen, healing is possible. We vow to refrain from ingesting foods that make us suffer, and we also vow to ingest foods that are healthy and wholesome. In the third turning of the wheel of the Second Noble Truth, realization, we not only vow, but we actually stop ingesting the nutriments that create our suffering. Some people think that to end suffering, you have to stop everything: body, feelings, perceptions, mental formations, and consciousness. But that is not correct. The third stage of the Second Noble Truth can be described as: when hungry, I eat. When tired, I sleep. When someone has realized this stage, she has a certain lightness and freedom. What she wants to do is fully in accord with the mindfulness trainings, and she does nothing to cause herself or others harm. Confucius said, "At 30, I was able to stand on my own feet. At 40, I had no more doubts. At 50, I knew the mandate of earth and sky. At 60, I could do what I wanted without going against the path." The last of the 10 ox herding pictures in the Zen tradition is called entering the marketplace with open hands. You are free to come and go as you please. This is the action of non-action. Suffering no longer arises. This stage is not something you can imitate. You have to reach this stage of realization within yourself. At the end of the 19th century in Vietnam, Master Nhat Dinh asked the king for permission to retire from being abbot of a national temple so he could live in a mountain hut and take care of his aging mother. Many officials made offerings to the master and begged him to found another temple, but he preferred to live simply, in great peace and joy. One day, his mother fell ill and needed fish to eat. He went down to the marketplace, asked some vendors for a fish, and carried it back up the mountain. Onlookers asked, "What is a Buddhist monk doing with a fish?" But someone of Master Nhat Dinh's realization could do as he pleased without going against the precepts. At the third stage of the Second Noble Truth, you only have to be yourself. The form is not important. But be careful. First, there has to be genuine insight, genuine freedom. Realizing well-being. When we have a toothache, we know that not having a toothache is happiness. But later, when we don't have a toothache, we don't treasure our non-toothache. Practicing mindfulness helps us learn to appreciate the well-being that is already there. With mindfulness, we treasure our happiness and can make it last longer. I always ask psychotherapists, "Why do you only talk to your clients about suffering? Why not help them touch the seeds of happiness that are also there?" Psychotherapists need to help their patients be in touch with the third noble truth, the cessation of suffering. I encourage them to practice walking meditation and tea meditation with their patients in order to water the seeds of joy in them. Please ask yourself, what nourishes joy in me? What nourishes joy in others? Do I nourish joy in myself and others enough? These are questions about the third noble truth. The cessation of suffering, well-being, is available if you know how to enjoy the precious jewels you already have. You have eyes that can see, lungs that can breathe, legs that can walk, and lips that can smile. When you are suffering, look deeply at your situation and find the conditions for happiness that are already there, already available. When we begin the first stage of the third noble truth, we already have some happiness, but we are not exactly aware of it. We are free, but we don't know that we are free. When we are young, we are strong and healthy, but we don't appreciate it. Even if someone tries to tell us, we cannot realize what we have. Only when we have difficulty walking do we realize how wonderful it was to have two healthy legs. The first turning of the third noble truth is the recognition of the possibility of the absence of suffering and the presence of peace. If we do not have peace and joy at this moment, we can at least remember some peace and joy we experienced in the past, or observe the peace and joy of others. We see that well-being is possible. The second turning is to encourage ourselves to find peace and joy. If you want to garden, you have to bend down and touch the soil. Gardening is a practice, not an idea. To practice the four noble truths, you yourself have to touch deeply the things that bring you peace and joy. When you do, you realize that walking on the earth is a miracle. Washing the dishes is a miracle. And practicing with a community of friends is a miracle. The greatest miracle is to be alive. We can put an end to our suffering just by realizing that our suffering is not worth suffering for. How many people kill themselves because of rage or despair? In that moment, they do not see the vast happiness that is available. Mindfulness puts an end to such a limited perspective. The Buddha faced his own suffering directly and discovered the path of liberation. Don't run away from things that are unpleasant in order to embrace things that are pleasant. Put your hands in the earth. Face the difficulties and grow new happiness. One student told me, "When I go to parties, people seem to be enjoying themselves. When I look beneath the surface, I see so much anxiety and suffering there." At first, your joy is limited, especially the kind of joy that is just covering up suffering. Embrace your suffering, smile to it, and discover the source of happiness that is right there within it. Buddhas and bodhisattvas suffer too. The difference between them and us is that they know how to transform their suffering into joy and compassion. Like good organic gardeners, they do not discriminate in favor of the flowers or against the garbage. They know how to transform garbage into flowers. Don't throw away your suffering. Touch your suffering. Face it directly, and your joy will become deeper. You know that suffering and joy are both impermanent. Learn the art of cultivating joy. Practice like this, and you come to the third turning of the third noble truth, the realization that suffering and happiness are not two. When you reach this stage, your joy is no longer fragile. It is true joy. The fourth noble truth is the way out of suffering. First, the doctor looks deeply into the nature of our suffering. Then she confirms that the removal of our pain is possible, and she prescribes a way out. Practicing the first turning of the wheel of the fourth noble truth, we recognize that the eightfold path, right view, right thinking, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right diligence, right mindfulness, and right concentration can lead us out of suffering, but we do not yet know how to practice it. In the second turning, we encourage ourselves to practice this path. This is realized by learning, reflecting, and practicing. As we learn, whether by reading, listening, or discussing, we need to be open so we can see ways to put what we learn into practice. If learning is not followed by reflecting and practicing, it is not true learning. In this stage, we see that the path has everything to do with our real difficulties in life. A practice that does not concern our real suffering is not a path we need. Many people are awakened during a difficult period in their lives when they see that living irresponsibly has been the cause of their suffering, and that by transforming their lifestyle, they can bring an end to their suffering. Transformation is gradual, but once we see clearly the causes of our suffering, we can make the effort to change our behavior and bring our suffering to an end. If we are aware that our heart is not working well, and that alcohol, cigarettes, and cholesterol are causes of this, we try to stop ingesting these things. In the second stage of the path, there is an increase in freedom every day. The path becomes real as we put into practice what we have learned. The Buddha advised us to identify the kinds of nutriments that have been feeding our pain, and then simply to stop ingesting them. We do our best, and we ask our brothers and sisters to help us. We can't expect our difficulties to go away by themselves. We have to do certain things and not do other things. The moment we resolve to stop feeding our suffering, a path appears in front of us, which is the Noble Eightfold Path to well-being. The Buddha is a physician. That is why he invited us to bring our suffering to him. We are also physicians. We must be determined to transform our difficulties to confirm that well-being is possible. The Buddha identified the Noble Eightfold Path to well-being and urged us to follow it. The third turning of the wheel of the fourth noble truth is the realization that we are practicing this path. When you are assigned a kongan, koan, by your meditation instructor, such as, "What is the sound of one hand clapping?" or "Why did Bodhidharma come from the West?" you have to ask yourself, what does this have to do with my real suffering, my depression, my fear, or my anger? If it doesn't have anything to do with these real problems, it may not be a path you need. It may be just an escape. Practice your kongan in a way that your suffering is transformed. This is suffering. This suffering needs to be seen clearly. The roots of this suffering need to be clearly understood. I have seen this suffering. I have seen how it manifests. I have seen its content and its roots. These are practices, not mere proclamations. Understanding things as they are. Yata Bhuta Jnana emerges from our life and our practice. When the monk Gavampati heard his fellow monks say, "Whoever sees suffering sees the making of suffering, the ending of suffering, and the path," he added, "With my own ears, I have heard the Buddha say, 'Bhikkhus, whoever sees suffering sees the making of suffering, the ending of suffering, and the path that leads to the end of suffering. Whoever sees the making of suffering sees suffering, the end of suffering, and the path. Whoever sees the ending of suffering sees suffering, the making of suffering, and the path. Whoever sees the path that leads to the end of suffering sees suffering, the making of suffering, and the ending of suffering." Interbeing is an important characteristic of all the Buddha's teachings. When you touch one, you touch all. It is important to understand the interbeing nature of the Four Noble Truths. When we look deeply into any one of the four truths, we see the other three. When we look deeply into the truth of suffering, we see how that suffering came to be. When we look deeply into the truth of suffering, we see how to end that suffering and touch well-being. When we look deeply into the truth of suffering, we see the efficacy of the path. Looking into the first holy truth, we see in it the second, third, and fourth truths. The four noble truths are one. We need suffering in order to see the path. The origin of suffering, the cessation of suffering, and the path leading to the cessation of suffering are all found in the heart of suffering. If we are afraid to touch our suffering, we will not be able to realize the path of peace, joy, and liberation. Don't run away. Touch your suffering and embrace it. Make peace with it. The Buddha said, "The moment you know how your suffering came to be, you are already on the path of release from it. If you know what has come to be and how it has come to be, you are already on the way to emancipation. Let us reframe the four noble truths. Cessation, the third noble truth, means the absence of suffering, which is the presence of well-being. Instead of saying cessation, we can simply say well-being. If we do that, we can call the fourth noble truth the noble eightfold path that leads to well-being. Then, instead of just calling the second noble truth the origin of suffering, we can say that there is an ignoble eightfold path that leads to suffering, a path of eight wrong practices, wrong view, wrong thinking, wrong speech, wrong action, wrong livelihood, wrong diligence, wrong mindfulness, and wrong concentration. We might like to renumber the four noble truths as follows for the benefit of the people of our time. 1. Well-being. Traditionally, 3. Cessation of suffering. 2. Noble Eightfold Path that leads to well-being. Traditionally, 4. 3. Suffering. Traditionally, 1. And 4. Ignoble Eightfold Path that leads to suffering. Traditionally, 2. Arising of suffering. If we live according to the Noble Eightfold Path, we cultivate well-being and our life will be filled with joy, ease, and wonder. But if our path is not noble, if there is craving, hatred, ignorance, and fear in the way we live our daily life, if we practice the Ignoble Eightfold Path, suffering will naturally be the outcome. The practice is to face our suffering and transform it in order to bring about well-being. We need to study the Noble Eightfold Path and learn ways to put it into practice in our daily lives.